Okay, we're moving right along. We are at a point where we're going to go to the flood control, the presentation. Wendy, you going to need a break?
No, I'm good for now. Thank you.
We're going to convene as the flood control water conservation district. Any public comment? Seeing none, we're going to move on.
Through the chair, we have one online.
Okay, go ahead.
John Bennett, it's your turn to speak.
Yes, thank you. So I guess I've got one question of clarification, and that is with this GSA type of questions that's typically addressed before the flood control district, can comments and questions be made during the regular comment period at the opening of any meeting, or is this GSA stuff only allowed to be commented on during the flood control portion of the meeting?
You're always welcome to make public comment on any item that's on the agenda. You know, if you need to do it, you know, before the meeting, if you know, before when we start the meeting, you don't have to wait for the specific item to come up, but you know, we try to get all the comments in.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. My second question, and again, is a question of clarification. I had somebody recently tell me that the Tule Lake GSA was, I don't know what the correct term is, administered, or the county flood control district was the lead on that. And I thought they were their own GSA.
Mr. Parker?
Yeah, hi John, Matt Parker, Siskiyou County Natural Resources. The Tule Lake GSA is made up of four bodies. So Siskiyou County, MoDoc County, City of Tule Lake, and Tule Lake Irrigation District. So those four entities or agencies make up the GSA. Tule Lake Irrigation District has two voting members. And there's a JPA agreement that sort of forms that GSA. So technically, Siskiyou County is, I guess, this body's representation of the flood control district.
Okay, I guess I missed the Siskiyou County is the lead agency over those?
No, Tule Lake Irrigation District is the lead agency, but Siskiyou County is part of the GSA that has one formal vote, while Tule Lake Irrigation District, because 90% of the basin lies in their jurisdiction, they have two votes.
Okay. Okay, perfect. So some of my comments I think are in regard to some of the things that you're going to talk about here a little bit later with decision making and that kind of stuff, and they might be a little bit inappropriate for today's discussion and meeting, but I guess I'd like to have them on record. I am from Butte Valley.
Yep.
I'm not on the advisory committee. I've attended most of the meetings. Through this process, it has been noted, I think, in our GSP that Butte Valley takes in nearly 285,000 acre feet of inflows of groundwater. And
Mr. Bennett, we allowed 3 minutes and the time's up, and I apologize. But one of the things I did want to bring up, we always take written comments, and that gets all to the board. So I need you to cut it off here in the next few seconds. So if you want to wrap up, please.
Okay. So with 285,000 acre feet coming in, 80 to 90,000 acre feet being pumped out would indicate that we are 200,000 acre feet to the good incoming into Butte Valley, and our water table is dropping. My question or comment to the board is, within the law, I think it's stated that one sub-basin is not to impact another sub-basin, and I think that might be happening My question probably won't get answered today, but how is Siskiyou County going to deal with that situation?
Okay, thank you. Okay, we're going to get on. Kent, we're going to introduce the people.
Sure. Good morning. Matt Parker, Siskiyou County Natural Resources, in charge of the SGMA process. So today I have consultants from StanTech, our facilitation team, Marissa and Emily. They're going to provide a summary of some of the strategic planning process that we're undergoing for the flood control district to manage SGMA for sort of the long-term future. Think of it as a quasi-business plan that will outline how we oversee the groundwater plans that were developed and submitted. So you all went through some interviews. We also interviewed some stakeholders. They're going to summarize what they heard and also follow up with some questions and ask for some input regarding this process and your all's input on developing this document that will get introduced down the road. So I will stop there, and Emily and Marissa can come up and take it from me.
Come on up. Welcome.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you. And thank you to Matt, and thank you to the board chair and the board for welcoming us here today. Good to be back here in Siskiyou County. We can skip on to the next slide.
Just get your name for the record.
Sure. Emily Finnegan.
Emily, thank you.
Comparison specialist with the StanTech team. As Matt said, StanTech has been supporting the GSA.
Just a minute.
When you begin to, would you at least introduce who was interviewed and who may not have participated?
Absolutely. Yeah. We have a kind of summary. We're queuing up our agenda here. So we have some context of who we spoke to provide input on the strategic planning process. We will then share the findings from those interviews, and then we'll dig into the vision statement, which is kind of the summarizing kind of long-term vision for this strategy document effort. And then from there, we'll dig into the goals and strategies that came through our review process. And then we'll touch on our next steps. We do have another board presentation planned for sometime this spring, where we'll dig further into the tactics and actions within the strategy document. Skip on to the next slide. So just a little bit of background. StanTech has been working in the three sub-basins, the Shasta Valley, Scott Valley, and Butte Valley sub-basins as part of the Department of Water Resources Facilitation Support Services Program. This is a program that's offered at no cost to the GSA to provide a number of facilitation activities, including the strategic planning process, but also facilitation of the advisory committees, which we'll touch on a little bit later today. So, of course, as Matt said, this is really the kind of business plan or a strategic approach for how the GSAs will effectively implement the three groundwater sustainability plans, or GSPs, for those three sub-basins. As well as maintaining the administrative and reporting compliance that SGMA regulations require. And we started this work around late August, sometime this fall, and our goal is to finish this up by June of 2023. Let's skip on to the next slide, and I'll let Marissa talk us through the interview process.
Hello there, my name is Marissa Perez-Reyes.
Thank you.
I'm also a public affairs specialist. So, you may remember we met with each of you back in September to chat through the questions. We also conducted a total of 14 interviews that included each of the chairs of the advisory committees, GSA staff, as well as a variety of agricultural, environmental, and residential interests in the basins. We did reach out to a group tribe, and they declined to participate in the interview and said they would be engaged through the process as the document reaches a more complete state. So we did provide the interview questionnaire in advance to each of the interviews. They were about an hour long each. For everybody's reference, the list of interviewees and the questions are included in the workbook that we provided. So in the interviews, we asked folks to identify potential goals that the GSA could consider, describe how the GSA would measure success in those goal areas, and then to identify any changes that might need to take place in order for those goals to be accomplished. So I'm about to share with you kind of the high-level findings from those interviews, which then feed directly into the goals and strategies we have for you to consider today. So
briefly before you continue, I'm sorry, but I think we need to clarify, because I think we've mixed up GSA. GSA is the it's basically the authority where the advisory committees are separate from the GSA. Is that correct or not?
I wouldn't say separate, but underneath
the GSA. Underneath it, but,
right.
Okay.
So the advisory committees do not have any authority in the Sigma process, the flood control district, or the GSA board has.
Right, okay, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that clarification. Each of the advisory committees serves in a recommendation role to the board. So, and that's something we'll touch on a little bit here as one of the needs going forward is to clarify those roles. So, is everybody here familiar with the SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats? Essentially, based on what we heard in the interviews, we analyzed areas where strengths and opportunities could be taken advantage of, and threats and weaknesses could be addressed through the goals. So in terms of strengths, I think first thing to note is that there was consensus across the board with the GSA. Did make a good faith effort during GSP development, so that was a strong point. There's also a lot of shared interest moving forward and collaborating through implementation and getting projects in the ground. There is broad recognition of the importance of recharge and how recharge projects need to be prioritized for implementation. Another thing to note is that in our role as facilitators, we work in multiple basins across the state, and the advisory committees in Siskiyou County demonstrate such a robust knowledge of the local conditions here, and that's a real strength that we heard repeated through the interviews and in our own personal experiences with the advisory committees. So in terms of weaknesses, we did hear that there was potentially a bit of a lack of staffing capacity, particularly when it came to technical topics such as fishery sciences and biology. We also heard from several participants in the interviews that there may be a need for staffing to support in the pursuit and administration of grants. Grants were identified as incredibly important to offset the costs of GSP implementation. One of the things we heard in the interviews is a desire for the GSA to operate on a lean staff, right? So that you're able to maximize outcomes for the staff that you do have. So want to find ways to accomplish those things while also receiving the financial support in the form of grants. So another thing we heard was need for more clearly defined processes among advisory committee members, GSA staff, as well as the GSA board in terms of making recommendations and decisions for GSP implementation. And just kind of an example of that would be in the event that monitoring data would show that a minimum threshold was coming up, there would need to be, there's a desire for more clarity about how the advisory committee, the GSA staff, and the board should respond in their various capacities to make recommendations and then to make decisions about management actions. There are also several opportunities that we heard from folks that could be leveraged in this strategic document. So one of the things we heard is an acknowledgement that while Sigma is a regulatory requirement, this process in preparing the GSP and doing implementation represented an opportunity for the GSA to be proactive and really take a step forward in engaging partnerships and implementing new projects. People we interviewed also suggested that more regular communication and defined relationships like coordination agreements with other public agencies, either at the state, local, or federal level, or even among district departments, could help achieve that higher level of collaborative work. Another thing that we can leverage as an opportunity is increased engagement with the advisory committee members who have such a strong knowledge of the local conditions. And just reflecting on the meetings we had just a couple weeks ago, there's a lot of energy among those groups towards moving forward on projects and management actions. So using that energy moving forward, definitely an opportunity. Additionally, identified increased public engagement education throughout the implementation. So there are several elements that do remain a bit of an unknown. They're important for the GSA to keep in mind throughout implementation. Some of those unknowns will be addressed through the anticipated DWR, Sustainable Groundwater Management Implementation Grant, which was just submitted and it's under review by DWR now. So if those grant funds are awarded, there will be an economic analysis on the impacts of SGMA as well as a fee study. So some of these items may be covered over in that activity. And it's also important to note that some of these unknowns are outside of the GSA's sphere of influence, like the curtailments. So they're just things to keep in mind as we move forward and hope to address to the extent possible. So with that, I'd like to get you to reflect for a moment on what you've heard, and I'll ask you if there is anything that you'd like me to clarify about what you presented. Is there anything that we should augment or add to the assessment, and then also ask you if anything surprised you.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. It's interesting, Mrs. Johnson and I were kind of on the same page in regards to changing state legislation. Every legislature meets robust every year in California with new laws. And the governor that may need to do executive orders and those sorts of things. That touched my mind as a use of threat or weakness. Either one of those, I agree with that assessment in there. We don't know what's going to be thrown at us. We've had this on other issues where we develop it, everything's set, and then the wheels get taken off the car or off the bus, and we have to readjust. So that is necessarily something we have to consider. The other part was for funding. I'd be interested in, we focus quite a bit on state funding, state water board, those sorts of grants, but any other outside funding sources outside of that. Now, when I say that, also the strings attached to receiving any grant money have to be notified, have to be identified as well. But there might be outside of the box potential funding that we could use to supplement our program here. And then with that, identifying the strings attached to any of those grant applications. I'll stop there, Mr. Chair.
Anyone else? Mr. Roger?
No, on this one.
So, other
help? Just one. On the technical expertise or whatever, just a comment in that I'm looking forward from a staff standpoint to staff the GSP. There's quite a bit of discussion that is yet to be defined, both in the, I think, internally here, but also as well as with my public, is what qualifications we'd be seeking. And some of the spectrums ranges from socioeconomic to hydrologic and engineering. And I'm not quite sure how we're going to define that or how we're going to pursue that as a county, but it will be a discussion point going forward.
So in threats, at least from my perspective, and I don't see it here, is the unknown litigation that will come through this process. But, you know, we've been granted SGMA the authority through the state, but yet we don't have that protection for litigants that may not agree with whatever the findings are after this entire process. So the unknown effects of litigation. I'll bring up our SMARA program that we took out. We took that from, not took it, but we implemented it for our constituents instead of the state. But yet, litigation is a driving factor that can't be passed on to constituents. It's too costly, and the county has to absorb that. And I think we're going to potentially be in that same position here. Even though I think this is the right thing to do, to take it on locally, I just don't know how we're going to deal with the threat of litigation and if it's successful, the cost of that.
So, Ms. Robert?
Sorry. Also under threats, the unknown effects, same thing. Supervisor Cox had mentioned unknown effects, future changes in state regulations and curtailment orders. and climate change. All of our data and our modeling really doesn't take into effect our climate and how that's going to change in the future.
Thank you for your comments.
I think the only thing I would, you know, for me, I would like a bigger, broader perspective. You said you look throughout the state, every Southern California, I mean, every place has water issues significant. I'm glad that you referenced how the local knowledge of local people, because they're the most valuable, for me, the most valuable input to it. So somewhere down the line, I would love to know how, maybe offline, whatever, how we stack up against the other entities and what, maybe something that they're up against and we're not, and or vice versa, because I need all the information I can get to make a valid decision. So that's what I would need to go for.
All right.
Thank you.
Sounds good. With that, I'm going to pass the baton off to Emily. Feverishly taking notes over there. Yeah. One other component I should mention is part of Santec's role with the Department of Water Resources Facilitation Support Services Program. We also support DWR with GSA forums, where we bring together groundwater sustainability agencies from across the state virtually. We had one in the fall that was focused on funding and financing, and we have one that is being prepared right now in the spring that will be focused on domestic wells and well permitting, which is high on the minds here as well. So we can make sure that you all have access to that information. But there are a number of statewide convenings of GSAs that I think some of these key questions that you're contending with, other GSAs are also struggling with as well. So we can make sure you get those resources to you. Okay, so getting into the kind of meat and potatoes of the strategy document. Before we go into the components, I just want to define these components, make sure we have a shared language of what we mean when we're talking about these things. The first is the vision statement, and this is really a broad description of the region's kind of future end state, or the GSA's kind of intended role. This is meant to be broad and something that the GSA can commit to over the 20-year duration of GSP implementation. From there, we then dig into the goals. That really answers the kind of what are we hoping to achieve from the desired state of activities, and that lays the foundation for the planning process. From there, we get into the strategies, and that is kind of the how. So how do we plan to achieve those goals from a high level? And then the tactics get into the specific actions within each of those strategies that we will take to fulfill the strategy. Okay, I think we can move on then. So getting to the vision statement, we did include the vision statement as part of our interview. So it was a written document that all of our interviewees had the opportunity to reflect upon, let us know if there was anything that they thought should be augmented or removed within the vision statement. And a few things that we heard throughout, one was the incorporation of the word collaborative. And that was something that we heard really across the board, a general high degree of consensus around including the word collaborative in there. So you'll see it's in the first line, the district will collaboratively work towards effective groundwater management. That was something that we heard general consensus on including, and something that we incorporated into the start of the vision statement. Another addition that we heard, where we heard a bit of divergence, which is what we wanted to bring to you all this morning, is the use of the word equitable. So from some interview participants, we heard that word was important, not equity in outcome, but equity in process, so that equitable consideration would be made to all beneficial users and uses of groundwater. So you'll see there in the second option, that's where that word is reflected. On the other hand, we also heard from some folks that the word equitable is difficult to define. And that there are some risks in including that in the vision statement because it may be interpreted in different ways by different individuals. And so we put before you these two options here. I will read them out loud, or I'll read the first one out loud just for our folks online or those that may be joining by phone. So the vision statement we have is that the district will work collaboratively, or will collaboratively work towards effective groundwater management to achieve and maintain sustainability of the three basins, the Shasta Valley, Butte Valley, and Shasta Valley basins, consistent with SGMA and the near and long-term goals defined in the GSPs, with consideration given to all beneficial groundwater users. And the only difference with the second option is we include in the very last line with equitable consideration given to all beneficial groundwater users. Before we go into the discussion, I just want to pause, see if there are any questions before we, you can probably advance to the next slide if you like. Thank you.
Yeah, so back to the board, right?
Yeah. So curious if you had any thoughts on what keeping that word equitable in the vision statement would mean, or what removing it would mean, and if you have thoughts on how the GSA would like to move forward.
So is it up?
I would have something to say.
Just have a look at much. I can see it. Feel the
energy.
Because it's been so politically bastardized in the recent, I prefer the word fair.
I was going to say the same word, fair.
Okay. Hearing that from two board members. What about the rest of both?
Yeah, I share that too. The word equitable has been used, depends on who's reading, how you define it, is the concern I have.
Mm-hmm.
But just consideration or fear, either one of those would be fine.
Okay.
Awesome.
Yeah, either leave it out or fair is fine.
Okay.
Michael?
Yeah, I either leave it out or fair. I think you might even get into a dialogue about fair and what that definition is. In today's world.
Yeah, I would agree, but I think the other one is just too general and leaves it even more broader. And I think we just try to the best we can, is what it's going to be.
Okay.
I think I'm seeing fair as a possibility.
General consensus, okay. That was quick to move to fair in lieu of more equitable. And we can mark that in our notes and move along. Okay. So this gets us into the high-level goals. Again, this has been summarized across all of our interview participants. We heard three major topics rise to the top. The first one is focused on decision-making, the second is focused on funds and resourcing, and the third is focused on communications and engagement. Again, this is taking a look at that SWOT analysis that Risa just walked us through and looking at how we can reinforce the strengths and opportunities that were identified and help to mitigate against some of the weaknesses and threats that we heard. We did hear the most consistent feedback and consensus around the communications and engagement goals. So we'll spend a little less time on those and try to focus first on decision-making and funding and resources. And I think with that, we can move on. I will also note we want to get general consensus on the concepts behind these goals and strategies. So there may be comments about particular word or language choice. We can certainly take those into account in our notes, but we really want to get agreement on the overall concept behind these goals. So with that, we will turn to our first goal. This, as I said, was focused on decision-making. So this first goal is to clarify GSA decision-making roles and responsibilities and the decision-making support processes that inform GSP implementation. And when we say decision-making support processes, those are the institutional relationships or other relationships that GSA has where they would gather input from other entities that would inform GSA decision-making. I'll pause here and see from the board. Do you agree or disagree with this goal? Anything that you would change or augment?
Sure,
Chris. One thing I'd, I don't know how to put it in words, but you saw an example of it here today, previous agenda topic. The board had a question about this document for wells.
Mm-hmm.
So the board had these questions, and we sought feedback from the advisory council boards.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so it's a two-way deal where the board, we appoint the GSA advisory boards for a reason, because of the local knowledge, as you brought up, the robust knowledge of their area. And so I think it would be prudent for the Flood Control Water Conservation District to, when making decisions as much as possible, ask those questions of the GSA advisory boards, seek their feedback, use them, have two-way, and come back to us. Of course, the flood control board is the final say, but there's no need appointing an advisory board and ignoring it or not asking them for their feedback.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's something that we heard, again, really consistently throughout the interviews, is the role of the advisory committee should play in making recommendations to the board. Should the advisory committee chairs present to the board recommendations? Should they be filtered through GSA staff to the board? Should board members be invited to participate in advisory committee meetings? I think there's a few points within the process of where should each respective body be involved in making recommendations, and how is that all pulled into GSA decision making?
And just to follow up, I know for me, I attended some of the GSA meetings,
mm-hmm.
But I never spoke
mm-hmm.
because I can't tell them how to advise me on how I need to vote. So I would go and watch and take notes, but that was how I handled it.
Yeah. And I think we've heard different perspectives across board members around how to approach the advisory committees. One thing that we've been talking about internally with the GSA manager, Matt Parker, is how to create more structure on the advisory committees. In GSP development, they were meeting somewhat irregularly, and now we're trying to transition to a quarterly schedule where there's a calendar and kind of set dates that we can have clear input points where the advisory committee can inform the GSP implementation process. So small things like that where we can both create structure and also clarify decision-making and recommendation roles.
I agree, and I'm not exactly sure how it should be changed yet.
We touched on that when we get into the strategies.
Supervisor Cossack?
Yeah, I agree. That's the question we're talking about on that goal, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I agree, too. I just had a question from a council standpoint. In our participation, often, and I look at the plan commission as an example, where there's some pretty formidable barriers between our communications and them. I really need to know some of the dialogue that occurs with the members of the advisory committee, because that context is just as important to the decision-making process as whatever I see in print.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where those boundaries are.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm understanding correctly, you're inquiring as to what extent can you have communication with the members of the advisory committee because they're going to be advising the board? Is that the idea?
Sure, because we're talking about transparency, but that works with us as well.
Yeah. Rather than give you an answer off the top of my head, which I might have to revise later, let me look into that, and we'll shoot the board a memo giving some advice on that.
I appreciate that. It surely affects a broad spectrum of our constituency, the decisions we make, and I really want those to be fully informed.
Mm-hmm. I'll just add, part of our role is doing the summaries from the advisory committee meetings, which are quite in-depth and provide a lot of the back and forth and discussion. So I don't know if those meeting minutes that are posted, but we can make sure that they're available to you all as well. If you aren't able to join, that's a good way to stay apprised of what's happening at the advisory committees. Okay, I think we can dig into the first strategy here. We've already kind of touched on it. This is focused on the item that we're talking about now. So the first strategy is to better define the decision-making roles and responsibilities among the GSA board members, GSA staff, and advisory committee members. And in particular, identify where additional staffing resources may be needed. One thing I didn't note at the start, we have these three defined strategies and the three defined goals and the strategies within each. But a lot of these are really cross-cutting in terms of how we implement them. So as we, for example, better understand the relationships between these various groups, it may be noted that additional staffing resources are needed to support kind of convening the advisory committees or facilitating the advisory committees or creating better communications between these various entities. So we just wanted to note that in there as well. The question to the board is, do you agree or disagree with this strategy? I think I've been hearing general consensus with this idea. Is there anything that should be changed? And then we have a secondary question there about how staffing gaps can be determined. I think that could be a much longer discussion, but if you have any high-level thoughts on that latter question, we'd love to hear them now as well.
Michael? I think that, for instance, as an example, if a project is determined, but the project can't get off the ground because staffing level is too low,
mm-hmm.
whether it's pursuing a grant or even initiating the implementation, that to me would signify that, you know, we have a staffing gap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so staffing gaps staffing gaps, particularly around project implementation.
Anyone else?
I agree. I'd like to see tribal relationships fostered more. And we need to find mutually beneficial projects that we can all work on together and make happen. And I think that's going to move things forward.
So you can note that comment.
Anyone else?
Okay, great. So hearing broad consensus on that one, we'll go to the second strategy. This one is really focused on the partnerships that GSA has with other public agencies. That could be state agencies, federal agencies, local agencies, as well as key basin stakeholders. One of the central recommendations is establishing coordination agreements with other entities around data sharing, what regular communications could or should look like, et cetera. So that's basis of this strategy. Question to the board, if you agree or disagree, and anything that should be changed.
Anyone?
So, I think you take the word key out and just base in stakeholders.
Okay. Can you make that change?
I'm okay with that. Anyone else?
Okay. Only thing I'd add with the public, we'll have people. They may be taking the de minimis source of it. When these first started, a lot of people were coming for those that weren't big ag or small ag. But just keeping them foot of what's going on, services, domestic wellness, for example, if the pasture isn't being flood irrigated next to a domestic small house anymore, by coincidence, as we've seen happen, that small domestic well can't produce anymore. There should be outreach for the public, even those not intimately involved, can have access to information and those sorts of things.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that actually is a comment that we could incorporate into the communications and engagement goal, but that is one that we heard in the interviews as well. I'm curious from the GSA, are there particular partnerships that the GSA should focus on from the board's perspective? Facilitating these coordination agreements. I heard the tribe for tribes.
I made a list.
You did. If you have a list, go for it.
I do. So Sierra Nevada Conservancy, NCRP, Scott Valley, RC&D, Shasta Valley RCD, Orcal RC&D, Scott Valley Watershed District, and of course the Irrigation Districts. That's my short list. And I do have a couple other quick comments. Going back to the CE1, just by increasing accessibility on the GSA website to data doesn't necessarily give the groundwater users the ability to understand the status or monitoring efforts.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to spend a little more time explaining what we're doing because the data just isn't very easily understood.
Mm-hmm.
And then increasing education and engagement is paramount to making the number one successful. So those go along with the DMT stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate that comment.
Any other board members?
Yeah. I don't know how to include this, but the difficulty I have is with everybody that has an acronym behind their name doesn't often represent everybody who's a stakeholder or a water user. You mentioned SBID or Farmer's Ditch or whatever, that doesn't cover the plethora of water users in Scott Valley. And so I don't know how we incorporate them as stakeholders, but rather than name names, I'd just rather use a generic stakeholder term.
Yeah, it could be too, as we think about coordination agreements, that we work with individual board members in their relevant basins to kind of think through what partnerships would be most important to develop these coordination agreements with. But I hear your point about kind of broader community engagement needs to be beyond just agencies and institutions.
Anyone else?
All right, so we can move things along then to the funding and resourcing. So
just go back to your last one. I guess I missed the what are the strategies. One of the things that I think we need to include in decision making is time certain. Too often, we have meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting and get nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there needs to be a time certain for decision making.
Mm-hmm. Good point. What do we know in terms of timing versus what are some of the inputs? Okay. Any other comments before we move forward? Okay. Into the second goal, this one's focused on funding and resourcing. So funding, of course, as it sounds, resourcing, this is really focused on staff resourcing. So the goal here is to develop and implement a sustainable funding and resourcing strategy for GSP implementation and GSA administration. We did distinguish those two things because GSA administration has its own SGMA regulatory requirements with the reporting requirements to maintain SGMA compliance. And then GSP implementation, that's really looking at the projects, management actions, etc. And the emphasis here is on minimizing impacts to residents and ensuring that adequate GSA staffing capacity is available to effectively implement the GSA or GSPs. So high level, agreement, disagreement with this goal?
Agreement.
Great, excellent. We can move into then the first strategy here. So my colleague Marisa touched on this earlier. This first strategy is really focused on cataloging the costs and determining what additional funding and staff resources may be needed. And then from there, identifying how those remaining costs will be covered with a priority on minimizing impacts to residents and identifying sustainable long-term funding sources. So this is one that we know is in progress. We know the GSA has put in for the DWR implementation grant to do a fee study and economic analysis. So some work is being done on this strategy already. Curious from the board if there are any agreements, disagreements, anything that you think we should change on this particular strategy?
Michael? I would agree. The only thing I would potentially change or add would be that somehow to facilitate that startup costs are going to be far greater than long-term, but acknowledging that so mm-hmm. that as this rolls out, it's not a new bureaucracy that is just going to blossom into, you know, taking more money somewhere down the line. But that should be identified somehow in that.
Mm-hmm.
Startup versus long-term.
Right. And probably feeds into the communications and the messaging around funding financing as well.
Anyone else?
How will you handle additional funding when it's a opportunity or a burn?
It's a good question to pose. I mean, I think there's a number of ways the advisory committees could likely weigh in on that question. Other partnerships that GSA has could weigh in on that question. It could be joint pursuit of projects where it's not always the GSA leading, but the GSA is supporting other entities in pursuit of projects and management actions.
What the public's going to see in this ledger based on are you implementing GSP? Well, sometimes opportunities are opportunities and they're
mm-hmm.
not a necessary requirement.
Right.
But might contribute to the overall watershed health.
Mm-hmm.
Just, which is me. Sorry.
It's always going to come down to where the dollars are going to come in
well,
the projects and stuff.
I know.
Which is the $64 question in my mind. Particularly the ongoing piece to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I would add maybe to that is with that additional funding, whatever it is, somehow be quantified in time.
Okay.
You know, 2-year horizon, 10-year
right.
horizon.
Yeah,
so it's realistic to whoever's looking at it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that. Any other comments? And into the second strategy here. This one, again, we heard across the board a desire to focus on grants and other external funding sources to support our sustainability efforts across the basin. Curious if there's any agreements, disagreements, anything you'd change about this particular strategy?
We're always going to go after those dollars.
Yeah, agree.
No consensus. Are there ways that GSA can be more effective in identifying and applying for funding?
Yeah.
I already commented on this in the last presentation that we had before the board. Yeah, absolutely look for external funding programs or sources outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, there's always to be strings attached. depending on what the strings are. They don't apply for a grant. It's $1. They spend about $75 due to admin fees and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then also what regulations would everything that could impose upon a local area's jurisdiction that would compromise our role or our responsibilities in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Just a point of clarification, going back.
Back one slide?
Back up to the secure grant piece.
Okay.
It's pretty open-ended for me. To be securing grants to facilitate the implementation of the GSP, because there's lots of grants out there that are kind of crosswise with what our goals are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the grants that this is referring to is specific to supporting groundwater sustainability efforts and the projects and management actions called out in the GSP. But you bring up a good point. Some of the concerns, for example, the advisory committees are cross-cutting their watershed health concerns, not necessarily specific to groundwater sustainability work. So how can those concerns then be shared with other institutions or responsible entities to help address?
My caution is there are lots of entities pushing on pet projects, I'll call them.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't facilitate the implementation of the GSP, but another passion.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else might have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a good point. It's probably something in the decision-making process as well as projects are moving forward, and at what point do they come before the board for ultimate decision-making?
Where those grant approvals are going to come before this board?
Grant approvals.
Did I hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's the decision-making body, yeah.
Okay.
Moving right along.
Okay. Well, I think that's it for me then. I'll turn it back over to Marisa here. All right, so we are on to the last goal here, which is related to communications and engagement. And I've heard everybody kind of touch on it as we've started and gone through this, just the importance of communicating the value of SEPA to people in the basin. We have the overarching goal here, demonstrating the value of the GSA, the GSPs, and the project benefits that can come to the public through regular engagement, education, communication activities throughout the life of the GSPs. Make sure there's nothing else I wanted to add about that.
Hold on, Michael.
I think you need to include public agencies and tribes as well as public, because we seem to circle around that when public is different than agencies and tribal considerations. So I would add that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other thing I'd add here is just acknowledging that in the interviews we heard a couple of really specific actionable pieces, which I'll cover over in the strategies, but this is potentially one of the goal areas, whereas the previous ones are broad and will take time, there's potentially low-hanging fruit that's easier to tackle with communications and engagement. So we'll consider that as well. Is there anything else about this goal you'd like to add? Yeah.
I do. It falls in the line with the other ones, too, with C1 and C2. Kind of sometimes in the basin's water 101. Groundwater 101. I know in one basin the service water was shut off for the irrigation canals, and so there was people that had their domestic wells go dry, and they looked at an irrigation district well, it was very deep. That must be it. Well, no one knows what caused it. Your neighbor isn't flood irrigating anymore. What impact when your well goes dry, is it because the well 7 miles away is running, or is it because it's water 101, just to educate the public on what the basins look like, what we know about it, how they recharge, how they don't recharge. And also for 101, educating people on pass forward if something does happen to the well. That will be with OES and those things.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else?
Okay. So the first strategy that we have here is increasing transparency and accessibility of data and information to the public. And for example, Supervisor O'Brien touched on the value of having up-to-date information available on the GSA website. Certainly a more specific action that we could tack on to this strategy is exploring that possibility and making sure that groundwater users in the basin can clearly understand the status of the basin and the monitoring efforts. Is there anything that you agree with or disagree with about the strategy? Anything that should be changed?
What does transparency mean? I mean, some would take that, they're going to take it down to the minutia of the site of a well, but you know, the location where you may not get participation for monitoring efforts from a landowner if certain information gets public. I get that we need to be transparent about what's going on, but how defined is that, and how deep does that go?
That's a good question. Are there others have an idea about that?
I had the same comment, same question as President Kopsiff had. We have to respect private property rights, people's privacies there. Are we intruding upon for information? And I'll limit what can be released to us. We have to develop trust here. And so, what is transparency? Are we giving people a 30,000 foot level of what exists in the basin? Or do everybody's individual well depths, which we need to go that deep into.
Is there a better word that we could use, or do you think that maybe defining transparency in the plan would?
See, I'm about transparency because I think people need to know what the process is, and so, but I can see where there it can be interpreted different ways, so I'm open to a different wording of some sort. But at the end of the day, this has got to be above board. People know what the process was, how it all got developed. Because otherwise they're going to say, you weren't transparent.
Yeah. I think you just use increase accessibility of data and information. And
say
even to our website.
The same thing. Yeah. Okay. Because I think we're talking about data that's already available and making sure that people can access.
Maybe it's communicate effectively
the
accessibility of the data type thing. So just wipe out the whole transparency statement.
I just don't want the data to be identifiable by a person. Or a parcel.
I don't think that's, I would never put that in the transparency thing. I think it's the broad picture of what's going on.
I hope so.
You just define it. You have to define it.
Right.
I think it would be consistent with what's in the GSPs.
Well, transparency is one of those words. We talked about equitable earlier. It's been used in so many ways. Transparency has been, of course, it depends on who's reading, who's interpreting it.
At the end of the day, it's not going to be perfect, and someone's not going to interpret it the way we want me to perceive it, but we're going to do the best we can.
Yeah.
Chair. So, I mean, the only way you're going to get data is through monitoring, and the public isn't monitoring necessarily. It will be our staff and tech, right? So, yes, I get that we want to keep the public informed, but the public won't be making that decision. The GSA will be making that decision based on monitoring efforts that come from sometimes confidential access.
Yeah, so, and that's kind of the communication piece is, it's not necessarily, I think that's important for us to drill down on once we get into the tactics of like how will this, what does it look like for the GSA to achieve success in this area? I think that will be important for us to clarify is what that actually looks like.
That'll be our toughest one you've got to figure out. All right, moving on.
Yeah, all right. Moving on, here we are. Second strategy for this. This is the last golden strategy. I'll bring you on to our next steps and wrapping up after this. But this one is about increasing education and engagement with other interested parties on implementation activities with a focus on communicating information related to project and management actions and funding and fees. So, this is really getting into, as implementation rolls forward and as specific projects come through, making sure that those project impacts and benefits are communicated to the public. An example of this, like a tactic that we could develop alongside this is something like the
updating of the communication and engagement plan to share how GSA might go forward with notifications and inclusion of public parties in either scoping or implementing those projects. Are there any pieces related to this that you would augment or revise?
Michael?
All right. I the other interested parties, either you're a stakeholder or you're not. I don't know other interested parties. What is that? Is that someone from the East Coast who says, yeah, I want to know what's going on in there, have input to that? I mean, I think it should be categorized around those that are going to be affected, the stakeholders within that basin.
Yeah. And then do you remember
why we have that? Vested interested parties?
Yeah, I think that's language that actually comes from the interested parties list that the GSA maintains. So when folks are express a desire to receive updates about the GSP, they are added to the interested parties list. So that's terminology that comes from the both the SIGMA regulations as well as on the GSA website. But if there's an alternative board, maybe beneficial users and uses of groundwater is preferred, we could certainly amend that.
Brandon,
I'm fine. Beneficial users. That I don't really have a problem in that. I'd be interested too, is back to that groundwater 101, educating the public as well as yourselves.
Yeah.
I think you're missing the general public right now. Everybody I talk to that doesn't have an Aggies thinks this is an ag thing. But they need to understand how it's intertwined with urban development, with economic development and everything else, because everybody has a vested interest in this. And so far they've been unengaged in what this is. They need to be interested in this.
And maybe they become interested parties, which would lead me to just leave that in there. So we're all good, April?
No, I agree with you on that, on the interested parties thing. Whether it's the general public or interested parties, something like that needs to stay in there. And I made my comment before, maybe prematurely, about the education and engagement is paramount for all the rest of this to happen. And the more we can get this information out to the general public, the more things will happen, and the better informed everybody will be.
Yeah. Follow up on, so do stakeholders or interested parties include state and federal agencies? A lot of times we could get going to a solution for groundwater recharge or whatever project, but they're not informed. They kill it because of X, Y, or Z, so they need to kind of be brought along as well. Would they be included in that, or does it need to expand?
I think they certainly could be included in that. I know the interested parties list does include federal and state agencies.
Okay.
Any other strategies related to communication engagement we might be missing? Again, this will be something that we really get into the tactics and kind of the actual how will we do it at the next meeting. But are there any other areas we should focus on? Not seeing any. All right, great. So I'll wrap us up here. Thank you so much for all of your input today.
I was going to go to public comments.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah,
yes.
I was going to go to that. Let me just tell what the next steps are, and then we'll do that. So we'll refine the things that you shared your input on today. We'll get started on drafting that strategy document and prepare some draft actions for you to consider, which Matt will be in touch about a second board workshop, where we'll go over those, and we'll finalize it. So that's it. Feel free to follow up with me with any questions, and I'll turn it
over. Anyone in-house, public, like to speak? Anyone online in there?